Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition from the Touchdown for 90 Minutes. I'm Todd Stauber, and I'm here with Sam Lady, as always. We have a great show for you today. We're going to look at FA Cup action from the morning. We'll talk Eden Hazard and his run-in with the Swansea City ball boy. We'll talk the African Cup of Nations, Manchester United's new signing as well. Sam, let's start off in England, though, where with a non-league side defeat a Premier League side in the FA Cup for the first time since 1999, Luton Town with a sensational 1-0 win over Norwich City in the FA Cup, Sam. It's just unbelievable, an unbelievable result for them.
Well, it's the beauty of the FA Cup, right? Everybody wants to go with the underdog, and it's the romance of the Cup, Todd. It's an unbelievable, achievement, for these part-time teams, and a lot of these teams now that are in the conference are the sort of semi-professional, so they train two or three times a week, service once a week, whatever. But yeah, great. It brings back the magic of the FA Cup.
Well, it really does, and I think there was a couple of results that we're going to talk about that, just like you said, it's the romance of this competition, and I just think it's a special competition, and it just reminds you that on the day in this game, anything can happen, and it's why most of us are addicted to this game, because these kinds of things can happen, and just the chance that these kinds of things can happen just draw us to the game. And, it was substitute Scott Rendell's strike is 10 minutes from time, and it was a great goal. Norwich City didn't play well on the day, but, you can't take anything away from Luton Town. As you said, they're a conference side, part-time players for the most part. They've earned this, in the last round, they were able to get by Wolves with a 1-0 win, and now here they are heading into the next round, and I just think it was fantastic to watch it all happen and watch it unravel as it was happening this morning as I was up watching the games. And, the FA Cup still, in my mind, is one of the greatest competitions in world football.
No, absolutely, yeah. I mean, a fantastic result for Luton, but it wasn't necessarily such a big surprise. I mean, it is a surprise. But any time somebody from Division Four or from non-league beats a Premier League team, it's always a big surprise. But Norwich now are on a bit of a slide. They've not won a game since December 15th, right? So they're on a bit of a slide at the moment. They're in danger of slipping into that bottom end of the table. They started off so strong in the season and. They've really sort of catapulted them, on a downward spiral at the moment. It's going to be interesting to see, if Norwich pick up any bodies in this transfer window, because I think they need to change something. Otherwise, they're gathering a bit of momentum, and it's the momentum's going the wrong way.
Well, and I think that if you look at Luton Town, they're just one point out of the playoff picture for the conference, and maybe this gives them. That bit of confidence that they need to jump up there and potentially end up in League Two next year, but I think for me, just watching those fans celebrate as it happened, it just really reminds you of the passion of these teams that are in the lower end, in the conference, in the League Two, and the belief that their supporters hold on to that they can climb up the ladder. And get into those, get into the League Twos and League Ones and work their way up, much like a Southampton has done here in the last few years. But seeing the videos and the pictures of the players in the locker room afterwards, it just what a special feeling it must be for those boys and to get that down. And just to give a little more information on Luton Town, they were in the final in 1959. Semifinals in 1994, they're a team that's a long-standing English team, and they've been around, and they have accomplished some things. Like I said, they're 85 places lower than Norwich in the football pyramid. And you know, 85 places lower. But it just really, again, I'll say it again, it reminds you that anything can happen in this game. It can be the best and the worst of games, just depending on the day. But it just shows you that you've got to show up and play. You've got to show up, and you've got to be you've got to play no matter who you're playing against. So great result. Another result that was a little bit shocking was MK Dons with a 4-2 win over QPR. They were at one point up 4-0. It wasn't until an 83rd minute Jabe Offord goal for QPR, and then an injury time goal that got them to 4-2. But Milton Keynes on, you know, I think that they probably put a twitch in Harry Redknapp's head there with this result. When you say that,
I was about to say that. You know, it looks like the pre-Redknapp team from QPR turned up today. I mean, 4-0 down, Todd. Against a, 4-0 down, you're a Premier League team, regardless, if you're playing your utility players or your squad players. That's mm-hmm. still a pretty embarrassing position to find yourself in, as a Premier League player, Todd, when you're earning $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 a week, Look at the squad there. That wasn't far off a full team they had there. Greenhead, Traore, Ferdinand, Fabio, Bahim, Sonji Park, Granero. Admittedly, it's the players that are on the clutch for the first team, but goodness me, 4-0 down against Milton Keynes Dons. It started off
in the fourth minute with an own goal by Traore, and it just went downhill from there. Redknapp admitted in the game program. I was reading that obviously progressing from the fourth round of this competition was not as high on his list of priorities as it is to get out of the relegation zone. But as you said, and I agree 100%. It doesn't matter. You've got Jisung Park, like you said, Granero, Tel Ben Haim, Ferdinand. I mean, there's no way that they should be in a spot 56 minutes in that they find themselves 4-0 down to MK Dons. It just shouldn't be that way. But, again, it's the beauty of this competition that literally anything can happen on any day. And, well played by MK Dons, and hopefully QPR can better themselves and get themselves out of the relegation zone. They certainly won't be playing in the FA Cup anymore. Another result that almost, and I guess this wouldn't have been as shocking, but Brighton Hove Albion hosting Arsenal, and it was a back and forth game. A couple great goals by Giroud, Oliver Giroud, who I think. I watched this game this morning, and Arsenal to me is a team, and I said this last week that I think they're a team that's on the rise big time. But great game, Brighton Hove Albion, great stadium there, the Anfield Stadium there in Brighton, a brace from Giroud. It ended up with a Theo Walcott winner in the 85th off some poor goalkeeping from Brighton Hove Albion, but almost a sensational result there for Brighton Hove Albion, a team that's on the verge, on the verge of maybe getting into the Championship playoff to come up to the Premier League, Sam.
Yeah, it was a great game. I enjoyed watching that. Two good teams, Gus Poyet, former Chelsea man, he's got that team playing the right way. And Brighton in the last couple of years, Todd, they've climbed up through the divisions by playing attractive football. And, they similar to the sort of Swansea model. They've always brought in the right type of player, to fit into the model, not necessarily players that are well known, but they brought players in that fit the profile for the way they're going to play. And I don't think enough teams and enough managers do that. I think a lot of times, managers pick players because they're good players, and then hope that they're going to fit into their system. Arsene Wenger, right, being a classic example of that. Although the signing of Andre Santos and Per Mertesacker, defies belief at the moment based on their current play. But yeah, great game. I mean, both teams obviously, Arsenal renowned for their attractive football, and I certainly, think that Brighton at times certainly matched them. I'd love to have seen that go to a replay, for the Brighton fans and let them have a go, at the Emirates. But great game. Good game for the neutral, that.
Yeah, it was a good game. And let's jump back to Friday and a, I wouldn't say a sensational result, but Certainly unsensational for Aston Villa with a Millwall coming in with a 2-1 victory there. And Villa, what a week, you know, what a week for them. And sort of crashed out of the FA Cup now. And, you know, Millwall, their fans, they definitely have something to fight about now as they'll move on to the next round of the FA Cup, Sam.
Absolute shocker. And where's our guest speaker, Aaron Hyde from the Chicago Fire? He's not chirping right now, is he? He's got a bit quiet on Twitter, and I'll be sending him an out about that this afternoon. I'll tell you what, though, Todd, there's got to be a steward's inquiry for that Liverpool result, right? Aston Villa beat Liverpool at Anfield 3-1. You know, and the result didn't necessarily match the performance of the teams. But, yeah, ever since then, goodness me, you've got to think that it's the mafioso guys involved in that fixture, Todd, because ever since that game, Aston Villa, you know, they couldn't buy a win, you know. And again, conceding goals from set pieces, Todd. Any time that ball goes out in and around the box, whether it's a throw-in or whether it's a free kick or whether it's a corner kick, just looks so edgy. I mean, it's, you know, as you know, you play that decent level. It's, you know, it's simple organisation, Todd, right? You're either going to play man-to-man or you're going to play zone or maybe a bit of both. But, you know, it's all about desire, right? Regardless, you know, if you're playing man system or system, it's all about getting yourself in front of the attacker and not losing runners and clearing the ball, you know, as far up the field as possible. But, goodness me, Aston Villa, Todd, absolutely on the ropes at the moment. And, you know, wearing
well,
the fact that...
I think when it comes to those set pieces, Sam, you know, Alex Ferguson once said, was talking about... Dwight York and just said that he's very brave in the box, you know, and I think the brave is a good word to use about either attacking or defending set pieces. You've got to be brave. You've got to be able to, you know, be willing to stick your head in front of anything. And to me, this Aston Villa team, they seem defeated. They seem finished. And I don't know much about Paul Lambert, but that team does not seem to be playing for him right now. And you know, I'm concerned for his well-being at that club because with the result, with the Millwall result combined with what's going on in the Premier League, you know, I can see him leaving as quickly as he came.
Well, I think the challenge, Todd, is Aston Villa. It's easy to point the finger at at the coach now, but you're right. You know, it's clearly the players are not playing for the coach. And you know, I'm not necessarily sure it is the coach right now, but I think they're at such a low point, Todd, that, you know, the inevitable is on the horizon. They're going to get relegated, and they're not fighting for it, which is a shame, and it's a shambles, isn't it, really? You know, Aston Villa, so ever since Martin O'Neill walked out the door, the day that Martin O'Neill walked out the door, right, you know, a lot of things changed at Aston Villa. And, the finances were obviously one of the key reasons that Martin O'Neill left the team. I mean, they were, you know, when O'Neill had that team, you know, two or three seasons ago, you know, they were playing some fantastic football. They had some bright young players coming through. And, you know, think about that team there, the Milners, the Barrys, you know, and that was a solid group they had back then.
It was a fantastic team.
Yeah, and playing and competing against some of the best teams. And as soon as O'Neill walked out the door, the money's gone out with it. And, you know, that club's been on the slide. You know, brought Hulier left. You know, and bring McLeish in, and McLeish left, and you know it looks like they need to hit rock bottom, Todd, before they start building their way up because they're on their way right now, and you know, by all accounts, you know, Lambert's not going to get sacked. You know, they're wanting to get relegated with him, and the hope that he brings them back up, but we shall see.
Maybe Aaron Hyde has a job there.
Yeah, like I said, if they petition the FA. If they position the Premier League, maybe they can start playing with two goalkeepers. Maybe Hardy can get his gloves back out.
I think they're going to need to. A couple other just notable results in the FA Cup this morning. Man City with a 1-0 win over Stoke, two Premier League teams. It was an 85th minute goal from Pablo Zabaleta. It was absolutely shocking defending on that goal. I'm not sure if you saw that. But so Man City's through Everton. 2-1 over Bolton. It was a John Huizenga injury time goal to give them the win after Steven Pienaar had given them an 18th minute 1-0 lead. Bolton crashes out of the club. Blackburn 3-0 over Derby. Blackburn will move on. Huddersfield, Leicester 1-1. Barnsley 1-0 over Hull. Wigan with a 1-0 win over Macclesfield. Very. Jordi Gomez, 7th-minute penalty, and it proved to be enough, but really, there was another non-league team in Macclesfield that really played a very good game. And, I think in looking at that game, Wigan was a bit concerned. Middlesbrough with a 2-1 win over Aldershot Town. An 83rd minute, it was 0-0 until the 83rd minute, and that's when it kicked off with an 83rd minute goal from Middlesbrough. And Aldershot Town came back through Daniel Hilton, an 89th minute equalizer, 6 minutes of injury time. Lucas Jutkiewicz, very interesting name, completed his brace in the 6 minutes of injury time to shoot Middlesbrough into the next round of the FA Cup. But again, you know, in Aldershot Town, you have another team there that just proves what the beauty of this competition is. The only other result was a Reading 4-0 win over Sheffield United. And Manchester United currently 84th minute. They're up 4-1 over Fulham. It was a very early penalty that Ryan Giggs converted in the 3rd minute. Fulham started off in shocking form, gave away a terrible ball. He gave away a terrible ball to Wayne Rooney. It resulted in a corner, and literally on that corner, the Fulham defender just put his hand in the air and just batted the ball down. It was really shocking. But United struggled through the rest of that first half. Giggs missed a couple of chances. Nani struggled on the wing, but coming out of halftime, it was clear what was going to happen. Rooney with one in the 50th. Chicharito with another in the 52nd. And yet another in the 66th. Aaron Hughes has now gone on in the 77th minute to score for Fulham. 4-1 for Man United. And they will be going through to the next round. And, I think looking at the, looking at what's left here, Arsenal, City, and United, Everton still in. I think we're going to get some good games here as this FA Cup goes on, Sam.
Yeah, I guarantee it's either going to be Liverpool, Everton, or Liverpool, Man United in the next round, or a juicy tie like a Man City, Man United. It's going to happen. You know it's going to happen. It's destiny. I think for one of those four teams to end up playing in, or two of those two four teams to end up in, that's for sure. The magic and the romance of the FA Cup, and I'm glad that. I know you talked a bit just now about Harry Redknapp, talking in his pre-game notes about, this not being a priority. But, I don't know what you think about that, Todd. I think you set a terrible precedent. Certainly in the QPR situation, he's come in and they've been on the upturn. And, wouldn't you think that you maybe want to keep, somewhat the strongest team out there and trying to keep that momentum going? I think there's always a concern when you mix the team up. If you don't have that experience and you've been on a bit of a bad run and you just turned the corner, I think it might be something to say about, keeping that momentum going. Because at the end of the day, these Premiership players here have just conceded 4 goals against a mid-table team from Division 1. Unbelievable.
Well, and I think that I believe, and I've always believed, that winning is a habit. And it's you get into a routine. And I don't agree necessarily with the team of QPR's stature to, rest players because they're focused on getting out of the relegation zone. If you're Man United and you have the squad that they have, then sure, you can leave a Van Persie on the bench because you've got Chicharito instead of him. You don't have that at QPR though, and I think that at a club of that stature, I believe, especially for Harry Redknapp, you've got to get these players on a run. You've got to get them into a rhythm, and you've got to get them into the habit of winning. And it becomes a learned action, I believe, 100%. And I'm a little surprised at the result. I can't really believe that Harry Redknapp's too happy with it. But I also still believe, as we've talked on the show, Sam, that Harry Redknapp's a very good manager, and I believe that he will get this team out of the relegation zone.
Well, if you think that he was twitching, Todd, after that classic scene where he gets whacked in the head by a ball in practice, I could not imagine what the twitchometer was like after this game. He must have been going through the roof.
Oh man, I would have loved to have been in that locker room. One thing I want to talk about now, Sam, is Arsenal, and we touched on him a little bit last week. With Theo Walcott, signing and kind of pledging his future to the club, he looks much more relaxed. I'll tell you what, that game against West Ham during the week, they came out of halftime and they scored 4 goals in 10 minutes. It was absolutely unbelievable. And the pace that they attacked at, Giroud was fantastic. Podolski was fantastic. I really think that, and this is coming from a United supporter. I'm not an Arsenal supporter by any stretch of the imagination. I'm not a big fan of Arsene Wenger, but in watching this team with these young players, the Gibbs and the, and mixing in the Cazorla with that and the Wilshires, I think they've got a very, very good team for years to come. And I think that right now that they're a team that they are climbing the table. But I believe that they're gonna continue to climb the table, and I believe that when we get to April, they're gonna be in the conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, this is a big test today because I think we had this conversation a little bit around the Christmas break, Todd, and Arsenal got a habit this season or have had the habit this season. Of destroying teams, playing well, scoring 4 or 5 goals, and then turning around the next week and having a very sloppy, unprofessional performance, and then losing the game. But yeah, I think similar to Man City, Todd, have been going about their business right. Nobody's really talked about them. They're second in the league. They haven't really played that well, but now they really look like they're in business. They 1-0 winning today at Stoke, which is a tough place to go. It's the first time they've won away at Stoke in 13 years. And, I think that they're gathering momentum. There's a couple of teams like that. Liverpool look like they're gathering momentum. Massive game next week. Liverpool, Man City, and Liverpool Arsenal. Goodness me.
Potentially great week for Liverpool. Not only could they climb into the top five this week, but those are two huge fixtures for them. And I agree with you on Liverpool as well, I mean, they're always in the conversation, aren't they? We talk about, oh, they're struggling this and they're struggling that. But at the end of the day, those two teams are always in the conversation, no matter what happens. And I still believe Liverpool has got a big signing in them during this transfer window. I don't know who or what or when, but I still believe, that they're going to bring in another player here. And, I think that, just this morning, they did agree to a fee with Inter Milan for Brazilian playmaker Felipe Coutinho. He'll be on his way, the 20-year-old. It was £8.5 million. Southampton was looking at him as well. But they have signed Coutinho, but I believe that they've got more on their way. I think this Coutinho is going to be a great addition to them, a guy that can, is a playmaker. He can play in there with Steven Gerrard. I think it's going to be, it's a good addition for them, but I do think they still have more coming.
Well, I think you're right. I mean, everyone gets excited, unless it's somebody that you're already aware of, right? Went on YouTube and had a little bit of look, and I went on to Inter Milan and looked at some of the training videos and thought this kid looks like a business. He's going to play in that sort of number 10 role for Liverpool. Just imagine that. He needs a big lad as well. I mean, he's 5'11", so he's not a short little Joe Allen type dwarf player. He's a big lad, a big, strong, powerful lad. And just the stuff that I picked up in some of the videos is his accelerations and his first three steps, Todd, were frightening. And his ball control, looked very, very good. So, the thought of him playing in behind a Sturridge, in a Suarez. I mean, goodness me.
With Steven Gerrard behind him, yeah. I agree.
What a front five or six to be coming at you. It's going to be exactly. Like musical chairs for the defenders. It's going to be, I'm looking forward to it. Of course, he goes to Stoke in his first game and gets both of his kneecaps broke by the monster centre-backs, Shawcross, then you know, what we're talking about him in such a light. But, exciting times for Liverpool ahead.
Well, just a little more about Coutinho. He came through the youth system at Vasco da Gama, and he went to Inter at age 16. I mean, he's 20. It's just amazing. You know, we talked about this with the MLS draft and how far off our system is. But, you know, here's this kid. He's been at Inter Milan for 4 years. You know, he's a man in the footballing world. But he's only 20 yeah. years old. Last year, he spent the second half of the season on loan at Espanyol. That's where he worked with the new Southampton manager, Pochettino, and that's why he was at Southampton was in talks for him. Obviously, Pochettino, you know, saw the worth in this player, but obviously for this player, if there's a chance between Southampton and Liverpool, I don't think that's really a choice. But a good signing for Liverpool. You know, I think he's a player that's a little unproven, but you know, a little bit maybe off the radar. But I think that he's also a player that, you know, when he gets his chance, he's going to do very well. So, you know, it's going to be good. Let's talk Chelsea, because as we talk about teams that are on the rise, we can talk about a team that's in the middle of just a meltdown, an absolute meltdown. Coming out today, Benitez is urging Abramovich to spend money, which I don't think that's the right move by Benitez to urge Abramovich to do anything except please bring me back next year. But Chelsea crashed out of the Carling Cup this week, 2-0 to the old Swansea City, and maybe more sensational than the actual result, unfortunately, was the activity between Eden Hazard and the ball boy for Swansea City. That now I want to get into this, and I want to talk about this, Sam, because I got a few, you know, I've got a few things to say about this, but really just, I mean, at first, my first look at it was, God, this is shocking by Hazard. But as I went back and watched that whole game and watched how the ball boys were the entire game, and they were clearly there to waste time the entire match. This incident with Hazard late in the game was just one of many incidences when the ball boys for Swansea City were blatantly wasting time, Sam. And I just, you know, everybody's all over Hazard, or was all over Hazard at first, but I think the blame is to be put on these ball boys in Swansea City.
Well, I agree. I mean, it's, you know, you go to Stoke, Todd, for example, right? All the ball boys have got towels so that they can, you know, hand the ball off to the ball launching machine that is, God, what's that guy's name again? I forgot his name. Anyway, yeah, the lad that throws the ball in from the halfway line and it comes in like an Exocet missile.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, it's preempted, isn't it? You know it is. You know, they've obviously come out and the professional line is that it wasn't, but clearly something's been said before the game about, you know, trying to slow the game down as much as they can. And in fact, I believe that the young lad who is the chairman, you know, the part owner's son, you know, even tweeted before the game that he was going to waste time as a ball boy. I don't know if that was a fraudulent account, but it appears to be it appeared that was a preempted strike, shall we say. You know, I think it's a shame really, because everyone's talking about that situation, which is part and parcel. Maybe, you know, if that was like a midweek game and it wasn't such a big spectacle in terms of a semi final playing for a place in the final, you know, I don't think anything would have been said of it. It would have been an unsavoury incident, but you know, now everyone's jumping on it. And the sad thing is, Todd, is that, you know, it's taken away from a fantastic performance from Swansea, who, you know, quite frankly, you know, ain't played Chelsea over two legs, which is, which is what we should really be celebrating. And we shouldn't really be discussing the efforts of a 17-year-old millionaire son who's going to be famous at 5 minutes in.
Well, and you know, I think at the end of the day, when I was watching it and I first looked at it, you know, at first glance, the kid looks like he's 13, 14 years old. But now, knowing what I know now, he's 17 years old. He was tweeting. You were right. He was tweeting before the game that he was going to waste time. And watching the actions of the other ball boys, I think it's shocking on his part. I mean, if he's famous, it's for all the wrong reasons. And, he was completely acting. Really, in the end of the day, if you really look at the replay, Hazard toe-poked the ball from underneath him. And, yeah, he caught the kid in the ribs. But he didn't just boot the kid. He was trying to toe poke the ball. Hazard was genuinely trying to get the ball from him. You know, he wants to win. He's a professional athlete. Of course he's trying to get the ball. Imagine if something like this, that the basketball went out in an NBA game here in the United States, and a fan wouldn't, you know, a fan wouldn't give the ball back. It's unthinkable. And this, you know, this little punk is literally laying on the ball. He looked like a complete donkey laying on the ball. I just couldn't, when I went back and kept watching it over and over again, I did, this kid, I mean, he really embarrassed himself and embarrassed Swansea City at the end of the day. And I think that the most unfortunate thing that's going to come out of this is that Hazard is going to, he's already been charged by the SA. They're saying that the normal three-match ban is not a mandatory sanction for the violent conduct that, that he's been charged with. I mean, you know, we can go back to Eric Cantona kung fu kicking the fan and being banned for 8 months, which was later reduced to 5 months. But I'm afraid that the FA is going to overreact here because of the how publicized this event has been, and they're gonna give him a lengthy ban, which I don't think he deserves. If anybody should be punished, it should be Swansea City. They need to sort those ball boys out. They're there to get the ball back into play as soon as they possibly can. They're not there to do what these kids were doing. There was a point in the first half where the Celtic players come over to get the ball, and the kids kicked the ball away, literally kicked it away. And, I think that if anybody should be punished here, it should be Swansea City.
I agree, Todd. You know, I think there needs to be a bit of a shrewd inquiry behind the scenes as to actually what happened. But, you're right. The pressure blown out of proportion. Hazard's going to get banned now for 3 or 4 games, no doubt, maybe even longer, which would be a tragedy. 15 years ago, Todd, that ball boy would have got a clip around the ear when he moved on, right? And there's something to be said about that. You know, let's move on. He's got a red card, right? It affected the performance of the game. It affected the result, you know, potentially, you know. Let's move on. You know, you can't punish him twice for that.
Yeah, well, and there was some interesting tweeting coming out of France from one of our favorite psychopath players, English players, who said the only thing that Hazard did wrong was he didn't kick the kid hard enough. And I thought that was a classic and typical response from one of my least favorite players. So I'm not even going to mention his name on air. But I agree. After looking at it, I was putting myself in Hazard's position. You know, you're Chelsea. You know, you're a new player that's come in there. You want to win games. You're down 2-0 on aggregate. It's the 79th minute. You need 2 goals. You're doing whatever you can to hurry this thing up. I would have kicked the kid as well. I would have kicked him harder than Hazard did. I would have been wound up out of my mind at that point.
Yeah.
I would have booted him. So,
I bet the kid would not have done that if it was Stuart Pearce toss going for the ball. I think he would have probably dropped his pants and moved on.
Yeah. Well, I just to go back to the actual what we should be talking about, and that is the fact that, you know, Swansea City over 2 legs, like you said, they didn't just beat him in a one-off. Over 2 legs, they beat him 2-0, and you just can't really say enough about the job that Laudrup has done in continuing what Brendan Rodgers started there at Swansea City, and now, you know, here they are in a cup final, and let's talk about their opponent in that cup final, Bradford City, and the job that they did on Aston Villa.
Unbelievable. You know, again, you know, over 2 legs. You know, it's not. I think, honestly, Todd, my mum pulled a couple of her friends that she has coffee together. I think they're probably in a good position to turn Aston Villa over at the moment. But again, what a wonderful, a great thing for the fans. You know, for Bradford, Todd. You know, not too long ago here, they were gracing the Premier League with the Benito Carbones, and I actually went to one of their games against when they played Portsmouth in the Premier League, and it's such a shame to see that club fall apart in the last 5 or 6 years. So fantastic for them and their fans. You know, they're a very passionate group up there in the north, and they've stuck with their teams as they normally do, you know, and their players through thick and thin. So, you know, great for them. But, you know, again, Todd, you know, it's not easy to win, you know, one game, you know, like the Luton game today. But for a team to be successful, you know, from 4 divisions below, you know, over 2 legs, it is incredible. And, you know, it comes down to desire, it comes down to quality, you know, and it comes down to, you know, in a small percentage, of, you know, about coaching. And, you know, he's done a great job there, Parkinson, in getting that team ready and prepared for those 2 games. Because, you know, Aston Villa, you know, didn't have a shot on goal, Todd, in the second half, in the second leg. Unbelievable.
Yeah, it is unbelievable. And I, you know, what a great thing for Bradford City to be going to a cup final. And you know, I always knew Bradford City initially because of the fire, you know, the Bradford City fire in their stands in the 80s when you know, it was an awful scene. You know, for our listeners, you can go on YouTube and look up Bradford City fire and the stands literally caught on fire during the game. It was shocking. People died. It was very sad. And that's how I first knew of that club. Of course, they did have their, like you mentioned, their run in the Premier League where they did very, very well. But they've just fallen off a cliff. I think they jumped off a cliff with Leeds United at some point. But you know, here they are in a cup final. Great thing for that, you know, for that fan base. And I think, you know, again, I was thinking about this when I was watching that game and watching them celebrate going to a cup final. Just, and I think it's something that we miss here in the States, you know, these lower division teams and their supporters and how committed they are and how passionate they are for their team, even though they're in the fifth tier. You know, you don't see that here, one, because we don't have a promotion relegation system. But, you know, I think that I love that about England and about Europe, where you've got these lower division teams. I think especially in England, these lower division teams where, you know, these people are so passionate about their clubs, no matter what level they're playing at. And, you know, you've got these competitions, the Carling Cup, and you've got the FA Cup, that just gives them that chance. You know, not you're only going to have a couple teams promoted every year, and you're not going to be promoted right up to the Premier League. But these competitions give these supporters a chance to be on the big stage, you know, every year. I just think it's fantastic.
Yeah, it's great. It's, you know, a lot of teams in the Premier League thought, like, that, you know, over the years they've, you know, like Redknapp, have opted not to put their strongest teams out. And, you know, it's good to see that some of these teams are taking it a bit more serious these days. And you know, in a lot of cases, talk for these clubs from the lower leagues, you know, they rely upon the finances from these games to, you know, potentially float the club for the next couple of years. It's you know, these teams are in the lower divisions. They're on a week to week survival basis, and sometimes a big windfall like this is you know, something that keeps the club ticking over for a couple of years. So it's a win-win in those situations.
Well, I think it's safe to say Bradford City's safe for a few years financially after getting this cup final.
Oh, definitely, yeah. Although I think the whole of Bradford's going to be out of beer. And also for that all weekend, the cup final.
Yeah, I think Machen's just taken a flight there, so I think they're in trouble. Yeah. So you're listening to Todd Stallman, Sam Lady here on from the Touchline for 90 Minutes. We're on Blog Talk Radio, backsportspage.com. Listeners, you can call into the show, talk with us live at 760-283-0846. You can text us at 360-920-7273. We're brought to you by My Soccer Trainer. It's the highest-rated soccer training app available. I believe it's a must for any player or coach, Sam. My Soccer Trainer is available on iPhone, iPad, and Android. Let's talk next week. It's a busy, busy week in the Premier League next week. We got Tuesday, Wednesday, a full slate of games on those days. And, you know, I'm going to start with Queen's Park Rangers. They're going to, you know, after their terrible result this morning, they've got to, you know, they've got a couple days of training, get ready for Manchester City, who's coming to Loftus Road on Tuesday. And it could be a, you know, this result could be massive for them, Sam, if they were able to get a result in this game.
Yeah, I tell you what, Todd, there's no way. I mean, I would almost put my hat on this. I can't see them getting a result against Man City. Man City have kicked into gear, in my opinion, there, and they look a bit more business about them now. They're not as sloppy, they're not conceding as many goals. You know, they're getting the job done, and I can't see anything apart from, you know, Man City, you know, getting 3 points here. And you know what, in Harry Redknapp's probably looking at this one saying this is not a game that they were expecting to win, but, you know, you're looking at, you know, QPR's next five games. They've got Man City, they've got Norwich City, and that's got to be a must win, right, to drag Norwich City close to them. Swansea City, you know, they can't expect, you know, they'll maybe hope to try and get a point out of that game, but then they play United, you know, the week after that. So, you know, these next four or five games are going to be very, very important for QPR. And, you know, Harry's not stupid. He's probably looking at these games and he's putting little, you know, he's sort of putting marks next to them, you know, like, you know, we're not going to get a point here yet. Let's get a point there. We'll, you know, I'll see this as being a game we can get 3 points.
Well, he certainly knows the games where he needs to take his points from. But, you know, while all that's going on with him, he's got to be worried about the teams around him because, you know, you've got other teams. There's a couple big games, you know, a lot of games that are going to – that the relegation zone could look a lot different by week's end. Villa and Newcastle is a huge game. Two teams right just barely out of that zone. They play on Tuesday. You've got Wigan at Stoke City also on Tuesday. And you have Reading, who's also down there. They're hosting Chelsea on Wednesday. That's going to be, you know, I mean, Chelsea, after what's been going on with them the last week, I think they're going to be they're going to come out and look to put a punishment on Reading. You know, I think that QPR, you know, they don't have an easy month here. And they need a good month. And I just don't know. I don't know if Redknapp's going to get it. I think it's going to be I think the Twitch meter is going to be off the charts.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you look at it, you've got the bottom three right now is Reading, Wigan and Queen's Park Rangers. And, you know, at least one of those three, Todd, have got a little bit of a smirk in the sense that they know Aston Villa are going to get worse as the season goes on. So, you know, it's almost like Aston Villa are guaranteed to get relegated. Newcastle down there as well. You know, Southampton, Fulham getting close. I mean, you know, Norwich are on the slide. You know, West Ham haven't won in five games. It's, it's really up for grabs. You know, looking at it now, you know, I think QPR may have enough to get out of it just because what they bought. I can't see Newcastle going down. I think they brought half of the French national team in this transfer window, so they've got a better chance of, staying up. But, of course, they're moving their training facility to Calais now to less travel time for half the squad. Yeah, it's going to be a very exciting. You know, QPR got a very tough run in. The last three games are Tottenham, Liverpool, and Arsenal. I mean, wow. You would hope that they don't need 6 points from those three games at the end of the season.
Yeah, because they won't get them. Is the bottom line. I talked about this with West Bromwich Albion in talking about West Bromwich Albion last week. I think it's always an interesting time of year now. Because I think January, February, you really find out who these teams really are. You know, I think in the first few months of the season, there's the romance, the beginning of the season, and a team like West Bromwich Albion or whoever it may be, you know, they might be playing above their actual level that they are as a team. And I think now is when it becomes important of how strong your squad is in terms of depth. You know, you've got injuries, you've got other competitions that are taking their toll, whether it be the FA Cup or the Carling Cup, you really start to see the true identity of these teams now that we get into January, February, and I think we are seeing the true identity of a lot of these teams. And I agree with you. I think Norwich City, West Ham, they're on the big slide. Southampton, you know, we'll see what they can do with their new manager, but. I think also Fulham looked terrible today against Man United. They looked awful, and I think the Fulham's a team that's gonna, that could struggle here in the last part of the season. So, but at the same time, you've got a Swansea City that you're really seeing their true identity. They're a very good team. You see an Arsenal and a Liverpool, very good teams, and they're starting to play now. And I think the true identity of these teams in the Premier League are really starting to show now, Sam.
Well, exactly, yeah. I mean, Norwich started off very strong. You know, Fulham, Todd, were playing some very, very attractive football early in the season. They picked up a couple of injuries to a couple of, priority players. You know, they lost big players last year in Dembele and Dempsey and didn't, they brought Berbatov in. But I think they're a team that has to invest in this transfer window if they're going to pull themselves out of it. You know, looking at some of the fixtures here, last game of the season, Todd, Wigan against Aston Villa. I mean, goodness me. That's almost a 20-30 million pound game right there. If Aston Villa,
where is that game at? Where is that, Villa Park?
Yeah, that game's at Wigan. And I'm just looking at Aston Villa's running here. It's, the next games are Everton, Newcastle, West Ham, Arsenal, Man City, Reading, QPR, Liverpool, Stoke, Fulham, Man United, Sunderland. I can't see where they're going to be picking up. I can't see where they're going to pick up 15 points in their total, which is what they're going to need to stay up. And goodness me.
Harry Redknapp's going to have to use some of his bung money and buy some points, I think. I think that's his only chance for Harry Redknapp.
You're looking at about 40 points to stay up. I think it was 39 last season. Right now, QPR, Todd, if they're going to stay up, QPR are going to need 25 points, Todd, between now and the end of the season to stay up.
It's going to be a tough one. Well, next Saturday, you got QPR in Norwich, which, that, like you said, that's going to be a game where they need to take some points out of that. And you also are going to have, on that Sunday, you've got Liverpool City. Of course, on the Wednesday, you've got Liverpool Arsenal. And let's just talk about Liverpool. Bam, I know you have no problem talking about Liverpool, obviously. But let's talk about the week that they have ahead of them and how important this week is to them.
Well, it's, you're right. I mean, right now, they're only, unbelievable, right? As well as Arsenal playing, right, recently, and, perhaps they've been a little bit, we talk about them being up and down. Liverpool, only 3 points off and only 7 points off the top four. Liverpool play Arsenal and Man City, in the next 7 to 10 days, and those are absolutely massive games. And, Liverpool got a point against City at the start of the season, and arguably were the better team in that game. And, it'll be interesting to see. I'm looking forward, I fingers crossed, that Per Mertesacker and our friend Andre Santos plays for Arsenal next week, because that will certainly help Liverpool walk away.
It's going to help anybody. Watching those two today, Santos especially, is just shocking. I mean, I think Gibbs has got to feel good about his place in the side with Santos there as his only competition, because Santos is just he's just not good enough, is he?
Yeah. I was just on his Twitter this morning, and he was getting abused, and on his profile it said that he was a professional footballer that played for Brazil and Arsenal. I mean, you're joking, aren't you? Goodness me. I've never seen. A left back be so poor at defending. It's incredible.
Well, he makes Patrice Evra look like the best defender in the world.
Yeah, he does. Yeah.
I think that Wenger's lost the plot on that one, but he does have Gibbs there, and I mean, obviously Gibbs is, I think, his first choice there. But let's talk a little bit more about left back. I was extremely shocked about Ashley Cole re-signing at Chelsea, not because I don't think that they should, but because, the word had been that he was gone, he was out. There had been talks about him going to Man United. There's talks about him going to Italy. And all of a sudden they come out and they give him a one-year extension. Do you think that this is a ploy for them to sell him and get some money out of him, or do you think that they actually are bringing him in to keep him there?
Well, I think what they've probably done, Todd, I'm not a massive Ashley Cole fan. I mean, I think he's a great player. Not a big fan of his antics off the field. I think they're probably looking at it and going, right, we can get rid of Lampard because we've got Oscar Mata Hazard, as long as he's not serving a 12-month suspension for correctly kicking a football boy. They're looking at that area of the field and saying, we've got resources in here, right? But, maybe the Bertrand boy, maybe he's not ready yet to play a full season. Maybe, if he gets injured, who else is coming in? So, we're going to get one, Ashley Cole, and that is, in my opinion, still the best left-back in the world at the moment. And, it's been pushed by Leighton Baines. And, I think that they looked at an area. If you look at that back line, you've got to imagine that Terry's going to be, off here pretty soon. I think they need him to stay around to offer that stability. And, I just don't think they've got anybody, in mind or anybody who can come in, and cover for him if he was to leave. So I think it's, but it obviously sends a very powerful message to Frank Lampard, because if they're doing that for Ashley Cole, but they're not doing that for Lampard, then, the writing's on the wall there, isn't it?
Yeah, again, we've talked about this. I just can't understand that. But, it is what it is at this point, because I would think that if they were going to give that to anybody, give that one-year deal extension to anybody, that it would be that it would be Lampard. But I agree. Ashley Cole, he is one of the best left backs in the world. I'm not a big fan of him either. He had an interesting stay here in Seattle when he came, didn't he? I believe that ended his marriage. And
yes, he did. Yeah,
and I actually, funny enough, I saw that bird out. I was out on Lower Queen Anne here in Seattle, and I saw her out. And somebody pointed her out. Hey, that's the girl that was that ruined Ashley Cole's marriage. And yeah, he must have been on a few pints that night, because I didn't think that was a great choice by him. Seeing who his wife was at the time, and then seeing that bird, I think he maybe had a few pints, but you know, I think that I just can't figure this Abramovich out. You know, I just can't figure him out, and I don't even know what to say about him anymore.
Well, there was a rumor yesterday told that he'd actually sacked Paul Lambert, who is the Aston Villa manager, but that was those rumors proved to be unfounded.
Yeah, I saw that on Facebook somebody that Abramovich had actually sacked Lambert, which I thought was hilarious. I believe that he probably thinks he's powerful enough to do that, but obviously that didn't happen. But yeah, interesting there at Chelsea. I think going back to our show last week, you know, I think Abramovich is the reason that Chelsea didn't get Pep Guardiola. You know, Pep Guardiola wanted a stable environment where he can build a project, and Chelsea is not that. Chelsea is anything but stable. So I thought it was funny when the Eden Hazard thing went down this week. You see John Terry coming off the bench arguing with the referees, and I just wanted to say, Terry, if anybody should be arguing anything about when character comes into question, you're not the guy. You're definitely not the guy, but interesting. You're listening to Todd Sovereign, Sam Lady here on From the Touchline for 90 Minutes on Blog Talk Radio, PackSportsPage.com. Listeners, you can call in the show and talk with us live, 760-283-0846. The phone lines, as always, Sam, are just ringing off the hook. You can also text us at 360-920-7273. We're brought to you by My Soccer Trainer, the highest-rated soccer training app available and a must for any player or coach. My Soccer Trainer is available on iPhone, iPad, and Android. Sam, we're going to move away from England, and I'm going to talk about some transfer news, or some not transfer news. AC Milan seemed to be in for a couple players this week. There was talk about Kaká. There was talk about Didier Drogba. But in the end, it didn't happen. But it looks like these players, Kaká, you know, you've heard Kaká and Drogba in talks about moving. What do you think's going on with Kaká there at Real Madrid?
Yeah, it's, you know, I saw Kaká and Real Madrid. I went down to the Mourinho course, NSGA course in LA in the summer, in July, sort of. You know, on the outside looking in, you see Kaká, he's a flair player, and you think to yourself, well, you know, you hear rumours of him leaving, and, you know, is it because his work ethic's not there? But I tell you what, Todd, he absolutely stood out in those practice sessions. Not only was he one of the best players, but his work rate, Todd, was absolutely incredible. Him and Xabi Alonso stood out, you know, like sore thumbs in a very talented group. Compounded any of those fears I had about his work ethic. But, you know, sometimes he just doesn't fit, right? You know, sometimes your faith doesn't fit. And, you know, he's played a bit part role at Real Madrid. And, you know, AC Milan has always been his home. So, you know, Italy, the Italian league right now, though, Todd's going through a lot of problems financially. A lot of the clubs don't have a lot of money now. You know, we've got Inter Milan selling Coutinho, and they've obviously just sold Wesley Sneijder. You know, that sort of replicates the economy in Italy. You know, the clubs are struggling. You know, the banks aren't lending them any money anymore, so they've got to, you know, reduce their wage bill.
In the end of the day, for AC Milan, that was what held them up with both of these players was, you know, the wages. Not just the wages, but, you know, where these players value themselves at, and what the transfer fee would be. I think it's good, because I think there's been too many players that have moved for way too much money over the last couple of years. Just unbelievable amounts of money for dead average players. And so, you know, to me, I think it's good that that reality is setting in as far as where these players should be valued at. And you know, I think it's definitely a case with these two players that it just, you know, it just wasn't to be, and it was based on the money. A couple other moves here. I guess we will go back to England in the end. But Manchester United and Crystal Palace confirmed this week that they've got an agreement reached for Wilfred Zaha. It won't happen until the summer. He's only 20 years old. He was linked with Arsenal as well, but he's agreed a deal to move to Old Trafford. But he will spend the rest of this current campaign helping Palace as they push for promotion to the Premier League. And, you know, I think it's he's a player that I think, you know, will not figure in straight away at Old Trafford. But, you know, from what I've read and what I've seen of him, I think he's a player that's going to be very good.
Yeah, he looks like an exciting talent, doesn't he? He's a big lad. He's very powerful. You know, and I think it'll be the right environment for him. You're looking at the teams now in the Premier League, and you probably think, well, you know, it's either Man United, Arsenal, Liverpool, you know, Swansea, where he would really fit in and do well, and you know, he would fit into the system, and at the same time, he would get some minutes, and you know, they'd be patient with his development. So. Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, you don't see a lot of Nani these days at United, so, you know, I think they're probably looking at getting rid of him and bringing Zaha in, and, yeah, I think it's a good signing. It's certainly an investment for the future. I wouldn't expect him to, you know, to come out guns blazing at the start, but, yeah, I mean, it would be, you know, what a treat for him to be training with Wayne Rooney and Robin Van Persie, and, you know, as you know, it's those players taught in practice that make you better. And,
yeah.
You know, playing with those top-level players is going to take his game to the next level. So, yeah, a good move.
Well, I like that, you know, he came out and he seems to have a good character to him as well. You know, he came out and said he's obviously delighted with the move. He's very thankful to the owners of Palace to make it happen. But he made it very clear that his main focus for the next 5 months will be solely at Crystal Palace and getting them promoted into the Premier League, which I thought that showed a lot of class and a lot of character out of the player.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
You also, Fulham picked up Emmanuel Frimpong on loan for the rest of the season from Arsenal. He recently just got back from a six-week loan spell with Charlton in the Championship. But the Ghanaian born youngster, he wasn't going to break through in the Arsenal first team, and he's on his way to Fulham.
Yeah, just come back from a big injury. You know, he went to Wolves, right? I think he broke his ACL, and it was a pretty bad injury. Yeah, good move. I mean, Fulham, goodness me, that another team that are on the slide. You know, it's incredible, Todd, isn't it? The difference between a team, you know, like you said earlier, at the start of the season compared to, you know, the business end of the season, which is after after that Christmas break, and Fulham completely on the slide, and I think they're looking to bring players in at quality.
Yeah. Well, and you know, I agree. And watching Fulham today, they did not look good. So hopefully, and he's going to bring them a little bit of bite in the midfield. Another move, as you said, Newcastle signed half of the French national team, but a big one for them, Toulouse midfielder Malte Sissoko. You know, the fourth signing of the window, but he's only 23 years old. It's a 6.5-year deal. He played nearly 200 times for Toulouse, but was frozen out of the first team picture after after he began talking with Newcastle. But he was linked with a couple big clubs, Inter Milan, Juventus, Tottenham, but it looks like about £2.5 million. And he'll be at Newcastle. And as you said, with these new signings, I think that's going to really, really help Newcastle out. They also got the news this week that Colaccini will remain with Newcastle. So that's he was subject to some speculation. He was just saying that he wanted to return home to Argentina, but. It looks like he'll be staying there, which is obviously going to help because he's the captain of the team.
I mean, if they've lost him, that'd be a massive loss. And by all accounts, you know, it's due to personal reasons. And, you know, it must be terrible. You know, his family back in Argentina now, he's so far away from that. You know, so credit to him, Todd, because he's been a great servant for that club. You know, he could have been one of those players, Todd, that left when they got relegated and they didn't. You know, he stayed there and, you know, arguably, you know, learned a lot from that experience in, you know, in playing in the championship and, you know, arguably came back a better player from that. So, credit to him for hanging around and, you know, lucky for Newcastle to get that one sorted in, because he's a big player for them. Similar to, you know, Ryan Nelson at QPR, who's going to be a massive loss for them here at the start of February.
Yeah. Well, certainly a lot of movement, and I think here in this last week, I know you're going to see quite a bit of movement, so I'm looking forward to seeing what happens there. You're listening to Todd Sovereign, Sam Lady. I'm from the Touchline for 90 Minutes. We're on Blog Talk Radio, backsportspage.com. Listeners, you can call in the show, talk with us live at 760-283-0846 or text in 360-920-7273. From the Touchline is brought to you by My Soccer Trainer. It's the highest-rated soccer training app available and a must for any player or coach. It's available on iPhone, iPad, and Android. Sam, we're going to come stateside now, and we're going to talk a little bit about Breck Shea. You know, we I think we successfully tore into him pretty well last week, and we thought that perhaps you know, he had gone over to Stoke and they saw him train and decided they didn't want him. It came out this week, however, that it was instead it was money, which was the hold up there. You know, you've got another player in Kai Kamara that Norwich City is looking at, and it looks as though you know, I think the Premier League clubs are finally overcoming the prejudice and assumption that the players coming out of the U.S. You know, aren't good enough. You've got a lot of players that are over there. You had Ozzy Alonso, Seattle Sounder player that was over at West Ham, along with Graham Soucy. They were on trial. Wigan signed Roger Espinoza. Jeff Cameron obviously made the move over to Stoke City, you know, I think the Premier League is realizing that they can get these players on the cheap, you know, from the MLS, that these players can come fairly cheap. However, somehow Breck Shea was not able to do that because he was asking for too much money. But the point being that, you know, I think you do have some players here that are realistically being looked at over in the Premier League, and I think the Premier League is starting to realize the value in these players.
Well, yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I can't believe that the Breck Shea deal was falling down, Todd, because of money. You know, it reminds me a little bit of the, you know, I've been interviewing an article this week with Jurgen Klinsmann in the New York Times. You know, and he's saying to these national team players at camp, you know, what have you done in the game?
Right.
You know, what have you done in the game? You know, what experience have you done? What have you won? What big level, high-level games you've played in, and, you know, that's certainly one of the benefits, Todd, of having a man like Klinsmann in charge there, because, I mean, goodness me, he's played and scored in World Cup finals, he's played in European Championships, he's managed European Championships, so, for Breck Shea, you've got to wonder there, you know, where his true interests lie. I mean, you know, if I'm thinking that I'm a young lad in the United States playing for Dallas, right, and I've got a chance to go play in the Premier League and train with Premier League players. You know, I think as long as it wasn't too disruptive to the, you know, the family unit, which you don't think is because of his age, you'd think about, you know, taking their arm off, wouldn't you, and take that opportunity. I mean, it says a lot about where his mind's at right now, and, you know, it coincides perhaps with his dip in form that we've seen in the last 12 months.
Yeah. Well, certainly interesting. I mean, I tell you what, when I got my chance to go over and play in England, I would have done it for free. And in the end of the day, I practically did do it for free, except for a few quid that came under the table after a few games that I played there in Birmingham. But you think that these guys would just go over and do it for whatever? I without knowing the ins and outs of what Breck Shea was demanding, or what, you know, what the MLS was demanding. And there's the other problem, is the MLS owns these players. You know, they're owned by the league. And so the MLS, you know, they don't want to lose a Breck Shea, who's a big name in the league, unless they get what they think is the right money for him. And clearly they were asking too much. And I think that's a problem, one of the problems with our system here, you know, that the league owns the players. But, you know, I think that I think it's good for the league to see these players going over. You know, I was down at Seattle Sounders. I watched them train on Thursday, and watching Ozzie Alonso train, I can't understand, especially watching West Ham during the week, you know, play against Arsenal. They could have used an Ozzie Alonso, a holding midfield player with a little bit of bite, and I can't understand watching him train that you know, that he wasn't picked up there. But I did hear that, you know, the league wanted a little bit too much money for him. And, you know, I think that it's a situation where the players would gladly go. And the league is controlling that. And I think that's a problem. I don't think that's fair to the player, one. And I think that you're, in the end, you know, you're doing a disservice to the whole system by not allowing these players to go when they are genuinely wanted. Stoke did want Breck Shea. West Ham, apparently, from what I'm hearing, they did want Ozzie Alonso, but the money the league asked was too much, and I think that's an issue, Sam.
Well, actually, I mean, for me, Todd, you know, he is, for me, Ozzie Alonso is the best midfield player in the league, in the MLS, without a shadow of a doubt. You know, he, you know, people have always talked about in the years gone by, well, if we lose Lundberg, if we lose Montero, I'm like, hey, guess, yeah. The Sounders game revolves around Ozzie Alonso. He's the link player that sits in, protects. He plays the simple 5-yard passes, and he also has the ability to pick and choose when to spray the ball around, you know, 50, 60 yards. And, you know, his decision making typically and his technique is very, very good. And I mean, you know, it was funny because when I had a chance to spend some time with Espanyol a couple of years ago in 2011, the recruitment director there, Santi Ponte, I think his name was, he was asking me, you know, is there any players knocking around in the MLS? And I said, listen, if there's one guy that's going to make it, it's going to be this one. And, you know, I actually sent him some YouTube clips of him, but I don't think that went any further. But, Ozzie Alonso is a big-time player. I can't imagine that West Ham would not have wanted him. And it's a shame I think it would be a good move for him. You know, he served his time, Todd, you know. He with the Sounders, and, you know, certainly when he played with them in the A-League, where he started, and then obviously he transitioned with that group into MLS. And, you know, for players like that, I think deserve the opportunity to say, hey, thanks for all you've done for the franchise and for the league. Mm. You know, this is an unbelievable opportunity for you. It's time for you to go, you know.
Yeah. Well, speaking of the MLS and bad management of their assets and just of their business, something that touches close to home here in the Pacific Northwest came up over the last couple of weeks, where the MLS is trying to trademark the term Cascadia Cup. And for our listeners that don't understand or know about the Cascadia Cup, this is a competition that's been around. It was since 2004 when it's between the Portland Timbers, the Vancouver Whitecaps, and the Seattle Sounders. It is basically. They take all the competitions between them over the course of the season, and at the end of the year they award whoever's won the most games between those three teams, whoever's taken the most points, they earn the Cascadia Cup. It's a very big deal here in the Pacific Northwest. It's a massive rivalry between these three teams, especially between Portland and Seattle. It's a very coveted trophy here, and the MLS has come in. And they've just tried to take the trademark away from a competition that was created before any of these teams were even in the MLS, Sam. They were all USL teams. This competition was created in the USL. Obviously, the Sounders were the first to make the jump into MLS, and followed by the Timbers and now the Whitecaps. And now, you know, obviously the competition has been going here for a couple years, but the MLS just came in. And they tried to trademark the term Cascadia Cup in the U.S. and Canada. Fans were outraged. You've got three major supporter groups in the Seattle's Emerald City supporters, Portland's Timbers Army, and Vancouver's Southsiders. And now those three supporters groups have banded together. They've formed the Cascadia Cup Council, and they're trying to protect the rivalry's name and its spirit. I think they have a point here. And you know, Don Garber, who I'm not a big fan of, came out and admitted he should have better communicated the league's intentions with the supporters group. And now the MLS says they have not applied for the U.S. trademark, but have applied for the equivalent in Canada, which I can't understand the thinking behind that. But I think that the MLS, they just kind of tried to do whatever they want, bully themselves around. But I think they ran up against maybe the wrong three supporters groups here, Sam.
Well, there are a lot of passionate fans in this country, Todd, but, you know, I don't think you can't look much further than the Seattle and Portland fans for being the most passionate and the most loving, you know, fans, you know, in the league. And, yeah, I think they may have bitten off a little bit more than they can chew with this one, because it's, no doubt that they're going to be sticking their feet in. Rightly so, Todd. You know, this has been a tradition that's been around for a long, long time, way before, you know, the franchises were accepting in DLS. And, it's something that really attaches, these three clubs, Todd, you know, back, a little bit back to their roots, you know, back to the A-League, back to the days where they're playing in small stadiums and high schools and things. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see how this one rolls out. No doubt there'll be some big guys involved on the lawsuit.
Yeah. Well, in other MLS news, the New York Red Bulls appointed former player Mike Petke as their head coach just on Thursday. 36-year-old Petke had been serving as the team's interim coach after Hans Backe's contract was not renewed. Petke played for 8 years at the franchise in two different stints. Red Bulls were looking to bring in both Gary McAllister and Paolo Sousa. Those failed. But I think they're making a very, very good move here by bringing in a guy who's been in the league, who understands the league. He's a young guy. He's 36 years old. He's very in tune with the players. And I think for New York Red Bulls, I think that they've, for once, that their front office has made a very, very good choice in choosing this coach, Sam.
Yeah, Red Bulls, you know, if you look at them, I think they've been through three or four different managers in the last couple of seasons. And, I think everybody knows, Todd, that any team and any club, whether it's in the MLS or in England, in the Premier League, honestly, you know, the one thing that, you know, that long-term success requires, and it's stability. So, I'd like to think that, you know, he's giving given time here, and that the franchise are going to be patient with him and not expecting, you know, miracles in his first season. You know, transitioning from a player to a coach, you know, can be challenging, but you know, at the same time, he's somebody that knows the league, he knows the players, he knows what works in the league, and you know, he knows what doesn't. You know, having been an assistant coach, Todd, he's had the opportunity to sit back and perhaps look at and witnessing some of the mistakes that some of these coaches have made who don't have the experience of the MLS and what's required to be successful in this culture. You know, I think that'll be certainly a strength for him and an opportunity for him, you know, coming in. And, I think it was a very good signing. And, you know, you'd like to see more of that, you know, in the MLS, because, you know, you look at the job that Ben Olsen's done, you know, unfortunately his, you know, career had to be cut short because of injury. And he was a terrific player for the national team and certainly a great ambassador for the game in D.C. And, you know, great to see Ben, given that opportunity there. And same thing now with Mike in Red Bulls, because, you know, it's taught us, you know, these are the types of managers that the fans can really relate to, you know. And, you know, I think you'll find, you know, I think you said this before, when there's a relationship there with a manager, you know, I think the fans are more patient. And, you know, I think that's certainly going to be a benefit for him moving forward here.
Well, with the Benson situation 100%, you've got to think that the Red Bulls looked at that and said, listen, we've got the chance to do the same thing. Take a player who played for our club, he was a passionate player, passionate for the club, and put him in a position where, you know, not only is he going to relate to the fans, but he's going to relate to the players more importantly, and the players are going to relate to him. And you know, it's good move for them. I'm happy for Pecky. I actually played against him in college. He played at Southern Connecticut State, and I played against him. He's a very good player, center back for them, and a great player. Enjoyed playing against him. Other coaching news, QPR's Ryan Nelson will play his last match on Tuesday for QPR, and will head to Toronto. He's going to start February 1st, which I believe is Friday. Is that not right? Gosh, it's already February, Sam. It's going so quickly. But QPR will, you know, just to touch back on their problems, that's another problem for them is losing him. But he will start with Toronto on February 1st. Other MLS news quickly here. Landon Donovan is definitely coming back to the LA Galaxy, which is, you know, a huge signing, I guess, for them to bring him back into the fold. And you know, obviously that's, I think if they can get a an invested Landon Donovan, I think that they're getting a very, very good player, obviously, in a good situation for them. You are listening to From the Touchline for 90 Minutes. This is Todd Starr and Sam Lady. We're on Blog Talk Radio and BackSportsPage.com. We're just about done here. Listeners can call in, though, still, at 760-283-0846. You can text in 360-920-7273. We're brought to you by My Soccer Trainer, the highest-rated soccer training app available, a must for any player or coach. It's available on iPad, iPhone, and Android. Sam, we are going to go in to the game predictor, where last week each of us had an absolute shocker and took no points. We're still sitting right where we were last week with you on 23 points and myself on 15 points. Not too far out, though. I feel pretty good about where I'm at. But we're going to talk. We've got a lot of fixtures. We're gonna give ourselves a lot of chances here to get some points here next week. And we are gonna start with Liverpool Arsenal, Sam.
Liverpool Arsenal next week. Oh, where is it? Is it at Arsenal or is it at Liverpool? Or is it?
Let me look at that. I can tell you that. While I am looking at that, though, here we go, fixture.
Oh, it's at the Emirates.
Yes, it is at the Emirates. Sorry.
Goodness me, that is a proverbial 6-pointer there, Todd. At the same time, part of me needs to, you know, I've got to stay loyal to Liverpool, but I need to make sure I keep my nose in front of you, Stolper. So I'm going to go with 2-2 at draw.
Interesting. A very interesting result. I think these are both teams that are on the rise, as we talked about today. But I just think Arsenal is in great form right now. Being at home after the performance this week against West Ham, I think it's going to go 3-1 to Arsenal.
Oof. Goodness me.
I was looking forward to your response there.
Yeah.
We're gonna back up to Tuesday though real quick here, and we're gonna go down to the bottom of the table on two different occasions here, and Aston Villa Newcastle is our first bottom of the table game. I'd like you to predict here, Sam.
it's almost like you can't predict it because Newcastle got so many new players, Todd. I mean, what is your Aston Villa? You've got absolutely no idea how they're going to set up, what formation they're going to play, who he's going to play. So, you know, Aston Villa are going to get spanked. 3-1, Newcastle.
3-1, Newcastle. It's at Villa Park.
Yeah. 3-1. Newcastle get three corners in a game, they'll get three goals. Pretty simple.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And they might even get one off a goal kick.
Yeah.
I'm going to go 2-0. Actually, I'm sorry. I'm going to go 2-1 because I think Benteke will get a goal in that game. But I'm going to go 2-1 to Newcastle in that game.
I just read a tweet that apparently Aston Villa have put a bid in for the Swansea ball boy. So we'll be interested to see. We know what their tactics are going to be for that game.
Oh, wow. Next game that we're going to go over there is Stoke City in Wigan at the Britannia.
Stoke City. Ugh, can't stand Stoke. can't see Wigan getting anything from it, though, but still somewhat on the slide. Oh, God. 3-5-2 from Wigan against the big ball launcher machine. What do you think? Oh, I'm going to say Wigan. I'm going to nick this one. 2-1.
2-1 to Wigan.
This could be the result that takes
it down. I also believe that Wigan are going to nick this game. But I'm going to go 1-0 to Wigan.
Yeah.
But I do want to see on that day. I do want to see the ball boy playing for them. We're going to move on to Saturday, and Saturday morning before we go on the air again next week. And I'm gonna throw West Ham United in Swansea City at you.
Okay. West Ham, goodness me, on the slide.
It's
terrible lineup this week. I mean, what was he thinking with that lineup against Arsenal midweek? Goodness me, it's almost like building your own coffin before your funeral. I'm gonna go with. I can't see Swansea losing that toss. I'm going to go with 2-1 to Swansea.
Yep. I also can't see Swansea dropping this game, even though it is at Upton Park. I believe 2-0. You went 2-1, is that what you said?
2-1, yeah.
2-1. Okay. Fair enough. I'm going to go 2-0. We got some similar results here. That's not looking good for me. And we're going to go one more. And
let's do QPR Norwich. Let's do that one.
QPR Norwich. That was exactly where I was going. Saturday morning at Loftus Road. What do you got? What have you got, Tim?
Oof, goodness me. 1-1.
Ooh, interesting.
Unless Harry Redknapp buys 5 forwards in the last 5 minutes of the transfer window on Thursday, in which case QPR won it 4-1.
I believe, especially how Norwich looked today at Loftus Road, I'm going to go 2-1 to QPR. And I believe Harry Redknapp will play himself and he will also score a goal.
I think I've made a mistake there, but we'll see.
Yeah,
my gamble. That's my 6-pointer.
Yes, that is your 6-pointer. Well, we'll definitely see where that is. We also are still looking to see where David Beckham's going to end up. That should come to fruition this week. But I've got one more for you, and this is going to be one that we're not going to get to until the end of the year, Sam. This is a 10-pointer, a potential 10-pointer. Actually, we're going to go with it being a 12-pointer. And I want you to predict right now 4 points per team. Tell me who's getting relegated.
Who's getting relegated? Aston Villa.
Okay.
Let me pull up the table now. Aston Villa. Reading. QPR.
Okay. I'm also going to go QPR. Sorry, Harry. I believe in you, Harry, but I just don't think you can do this.
Yeah, I mean they need 25 points, Todd, out of 15 games.
It's impossible.
I just don't know where it's going to happen.
Yeah, I can't see it happening either. So I'm going to go QPR. Also, I'm going to go Reading. But I'm going to stick with the 3 that are in there now: Reading, Wigan, QPR.
Okay. Yeah, I do. Part of me does feel that if it's not going to be QPR, it'll be. I think it'll be Wigan. I don't know with. But if it's Schuto might go there from Liverpool on loan for the rest of the season. So we'll see if he goes there. I think that'll add a bit of quality.
We'll
see.
So we're going to go 4 points per team on that, and we will save that to the end of the season. So looking forward to that.
Great.
But that's all from us for today on From the Touchline for 90 Minutes. It's been a great show, Sam. Really appreciate all the listeners out there. And, of course, all the callers that we get every week. Same people just keep calling in. That's it for us today. Thanks for listening. For Sam Lady, I'm Todd Stauber, and have a great rest of the day.